Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You are listening to Flop Culture, a podcast where we mainly talk about flops, but we also talk bops, hot goss, and pop culture at large with me, Fionnuala J. Thank you so much for all the kind words on last week's episode. A lot more what's your number stands than I realised. So there you go. They all came out of the woodwork. I loved it. It is Oscars week, or coming into it at the very least. So we're bringing it back to a Colin Farrell movie that we didn't get to talk about earlier this season. But before all of that, the news. Avril Lavigne is dating Tyga. After recently splitting from her fiancé Mad Sun, thus ending their engagement, Lavigne, or her clone, was seen publicly smooching the Rack City rapper out and about. Why is this significant? Strap yourself in, because I am about to pull a Who Do You Think You Are on you and prove that Hollywood is very small. So Tyga used to be with Blac Chyna. They have a child together. Blac Chyna used to be with Robert Kardashian. They also share a child together. Rob is half siblings with Kylie Jenner, who used to date Tyga. Kylie has another half sibling named Brody Jenner. You might be familiar with him. He was previously in a very serious relationship with Avril Lavigne. They were so serious that they went to Kim Kardashian's wedding to Chris Humphries. Brody and Kim also kind of vaguely not related by blood, but whatever, families intersecting there, obviously, because weddings, whatever. Let's go back to Tyga for a second. Tyga used to be married to someone called Jordan Craig, who was a child with Tristan Thompson, who used to be with Khloe Kardashian, and they share two children together. Khloe Kardashian is Kylie's sister. Also, Kourtney Kardashian's sister. Kourtney is married to Travis Barker, Blink-182 drummer, musician in his own right. He is a record label, which Avril Lavigne is signed to. And also, Travis Barker and Mad Sun are like kind of friends, kind of mentor-mentee situation there. So basically, if you've ever accidentally shifted your cousin before because you didn't know you were related, it was dark, whatever, it's fine because all of Hollywood is essentially spitting into each other's mouths at all times. So there you go. Genealogy be damned, it's time to talk flops. 2006 was a significant year for Colin Farrell. Personally, he filed a lawsuit against his ex-girlfriend for the unauthorised public distribution of his now infamous sex tape. He was dealing with a stalker and he was fresh out of a spell in rehab. Professionally, this was also when the tide began to turn for him as he moved away from blockbusters and epics to focus on independent productions. However, there's one major project from this year that he himself does not rate highly at all. Miami Vice, the TV to film adaptation he starred in alongside Jamie Foxx that was marred by on-set demands and a disruptive director. Joining me to talk about the film a little bit more, Farrell's chances at the Oscars, and as potentially the next James Bond, is comedian and Flop Culture's first returning guest, Peter McGann. Peter McGann, you are very welcome back to Flop Culture. How are you doing?
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me back.
I'm so thrilled you're back to talk about this in the week leading up to the Oscars. I thought it was only right to revisit this pick because you actually did say this all those months back when we recorded on Bond. So what did you pick?
I picked the film, the 2006 Michael Mann crime thriller, Miami Vice.
I love it. I love it. I've never watched it. I watched it for the first time for this podcast and I did enjoy it. I have to say, I did enjoy it. Not usually my genre. We all know how I feel about SWAT. And I at least thought it was better than SWAT. So we're...
It's better than SWAT.
SWAT is... we can't talk about SWAT. I'll be here all day. Why did you pick it?
I picked it because I was actually conflicted about picking it. So the lore of it is that first brought it up to me to do this, and my notion was, it's like my heart said Honor Majesty's Secret Service, but I was like, I felt bad because it's like nearly 3 hours long. It's a fucking old 60s fucking James Bond movie. I'd be putting Fionnuala through that. So I was like, I'll give her the option of Miami Vice either, because I was like, you know, Colin Farrell, Miami location, Jamie Foxx, it's like a bit more maybe easier sell. But then you went all in for the Bond, thank God. So then you said, well, have you back for Miami Vice? And I was like, yes. So my one concern with this is that it has become a bit of a, like in like kind of modern day cool film people terms, it's been reclaimed a bit. Mm-hmm. So I hope I'm not just feeling like I'm jumping on a bandwagon here, because I did say this ages ago about this thing, but I love it. I think it's a mental strange, experimental, weird film that's also about cool, deadly cops driving topless cars around Miami and driving go fast boats called to Cuba for a mojito. It's like the best of all worlds. It's like you got like cool, wild, kind of technical kind of things going on, and like weird artistic kind of stuff going on. And also, yeah, Colin Farrell with a Tex-Mex combo and, you know, gravel, just been class.
I love it. Similar. I love it. This is a TV to film adaptation. Is that correct? Had you watched the TV series? It's kind of it's not a full adaptation, but it's obviously based off the TV series.
I haven't, because I feel like it just, you know, some old shows like get kind of, if RTÉ didn't show, basically, like RTÉ showed the A-Team, so I saw the A-Team. RTÉ never showed Miami Vice, as far as I know, so I didn't see Miami Vice. If TV, like for me, I've, you know, find TV, old TV shows are harder to, unless it's on, yeah, UK Gold or something. It's hard to track, like, compared to like old films or whatever.
Yeah.
But I was aware of it, obviously. And I love the idea of it. Like the whole, like, location of it all and the Don Johnson of it all and like the Ian Hammer team and Phil Collins in the air tonight. You know, like all that shit. You're like, this sounds amazing. But no, going into the film, I watched the film first in college and I had no. I just knew that it was meant to be bad and it was not a success.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it and I was like, it's kind of cool. This is a very kind of cool film. And then rewatched. But again, I had no real kind of... And since when we were doing this podcast, since I rewatched it before I came on here, I kind of looked into it more, and all the characters, all the cops characters, they're all based on people from the show. It's like, it is a genuine kind of, whatever you call it, reboot or remake, just done in a very kind of serious way, which I didn't know or expect. So it is a genuine kind of reboot of the series, but also Michael Mann had no interest in doing a straight up like tonal kind of the same thing, which probably helped it.
For anyone who hasn't watched, and also kind of for me, because I'm not really sure I fully understand why they ended up having to go undercover, but for everyone else as well, what's it about?
Okay, so it's about two detectives who are, at the opening scene of the film, they're in the middle of this kind of sting in a nightclub for this people trafficker. He seems to be a people trafficker. The thing about the film is nothing is explained unless it's really explained in dense technical language. Otherwise, you're just dropped in, you have to adapt. So they're on this mission. One of them gets a call. Colin Farrell, Sonny Crockett, and then Ricardo Tubbs is played by James Fox. Colin Farrell gets a call from an old informant from an old job who is speeding down the highway, and he's basically rambling, saying they're busted. So they do a bit of quick phone calls and favour pulling, and they work out the job he's on now. They manage to track him down, find out that he's basically been this kind of go-between for the Aryan Brotherhood, so like these right-wing guys on this drug deal that was actually an FBI sting. One thing leads to another. He ends up killing himself because his wife is murdered by these guys. So now the two guys want in on whatever this kind of this operation is, which turns out. So and they come up with a way to kind of infiltrate the Aryan Brotherhood by going undercover as kind of smugglers for drugs. It's very like, again, you're going to have to. It doesn't explain things unless it's in very technical jargon. What I gauge from it is they basically. They undermine the current transportation system for smuggling the drugs into Miami, and then they present themselves as these smugglers who can do that, and they end up meeting the kind of the suppliers who are the Colombian cartel basically, and there's this beautiful woman called Isabella who's like married to the head of the cartel, and she's actually the brains behind the operation, or at least 50-50. And herself and Sonny Crockett, played by Colin Farrell, have this love story. And then it's kind of your classic, it's that classic, like, guy goes undercover, falls in love with someone he shouldn't, and everyone's very suspicious of him, and then it all goes wrong. So.
It certainly does all go wrong, doesn't it? Like, what was Sonny thinking? Like, I was just, like, their story is so compelling, but it's also like, surely it's crime, police 101. Maybe don't start shagging around while you're deep undercover as drug smugglers / transporters.
Exactly. And that's the thing about it is like, because it's not a traditional film in terms of like, you don't know Sonny's inner life. You don't see him like, you don't see where he's come from. You don't have these like kind of traditional character beats from. So when he does start kind of cracking up, like it's all done through looks. Like it's like these people just have this really immediate connection. And you just have to accept that. You see the look between them, they share a look and then they share another look. And next thing, the second they're left alone, they're dancing the tango and riding. Mm. And it's like, you kind of, most other films would give a lot more, I think, to the kind of build up to that, or the maybe kind of justifying why it, because it is so sudden, and it is so like, yeah, you're like, these guys are meant to be pros, and he's like doing, as you said, yeah, the one thing, it's the one thing you shouldn't do. And he's dressing up as like, no, this is good. You know, he's obviously kind of lying to himself and the people around, was like, no, this is a way into this operation. But and then she is doing the exact same thing with her kind of crew, where she's like, no, this is a positive thing, but they're clearly in love, and yeah, it all goes wrong.
What do you think of their Colin Farrell and Jamie Foxx's, I should say, relationship? Because that's another thing. As much as we don't get much into their individual characters, it isn't really a buddy cop movie in comparison to some others. Like, there isn't really, I didn't get this anyway, a strong relationship between them. And you don't, I felt like the stakes were kind of low there between them, if that makes sense.
I completely agree with you. Watching it this time, I was like, if I was to pick apart the one kind of clanging kind of thing for me, like the thing that is the flaw of the film is like the two of them, the connection there isn't felt. So then when the thing towards the end, when they're the moments like with a little fist bump in the car when they're about to head off and rescue a character from being kidnapped and stuff, there's moments where it's like it feels like it could be way more earned or way more like emotive if there was a bit of build up to it or whatever. But it just isn't there. Like Ricardo Tubbs. And from what I understand, it is very much Sonny Crockett is the lead of the show as well. Mm. So it isn't necessarily an even keeled two-hander, but like Sonny or Jamie Foxx disappears basically the whole middle of the film. Like the whole kind of, the second Isabella comes into it and they have this relationship thing, he's barely in it. And then he comes back into it in the end and it's all, I don't know, it doesn't have the kind of, the relationship is not on the most like kind of believable footing. When you think about other films that he's done, like Thief or Heat, even if they're not strictly two-handers, like the relationships there always have this kind of foundation or this kind of, he sells the connections a lot better than he does here. And I wonder, is that to do with, because Jamie Foxx instigated this project before he became megastar Oscar winner, Jamie Foxx or Oscar nominee, Jamie Foxx, I think winner. But so he instigated the project. So then by the time the project came around, he was probably the bigger star. Like, I remember I was in secondary school when it was announced and I was really enthused by Jamie Foxx over Colin Farrell in a way. The two of them was excited, but like he was kind of the big thing because at the time he was like, I just thought he was the best actor going.
Yeah,
but
he had just won the Academy Award and then signed on to this and essentially just started throwing his weight around. Exactly. Like, he's looking for a bigger salary, other compensation. He wanted top billing in the film's credits, even though he's, as you've said, technically not the lead actor. His salary was raised. Colin Farrell took a cut on his own to also address this. Like, he just seemed to have been kind of a bit of a nightmare on set.
Nightmare. And like that thing of, so I feel like, because if the film gives the impression and of like being kind of, I'd say like it was, he adapted as he went almost, Michael Mann. So I feel like maybe if Jamie Foxx had been a bit sounder, I feel like it just probably was like easier just to kind of keep, because it was quite, I assume quite a film that was kind of adapted on the fly. It has the feel of something that wasn't like, this is the script and these are the locations. Like there's reports like Michael Mann going down, finding locations, going in places where the cops wouldn't even go. So it's like, he's like, almost like the film is developing as they're shooting it. Mm. So I feel like maybe he was like, this guy's more trouble than he's worth. Why would I keep writing stuff in for him? So I feel like maybe that ended up, like the film suffered as a result of that, because he wasn't, because he just was, he just, him and Fox weren't getting on, or they Fox wasn't playing ball. So he's like, well, I'm not going to try and dance around you when it's already a very intense sound and shoot. And Farrell was in the throes of like addiction and all the rest of it. Like that man down in Miami, like in kind of probably around a lot of unsavory elements from the film alone, I'd say he was hard enough to keep tabs on. Then it's like, I'm not going to be dancing around for this guy who isn't addicted. He's just been a kind of diva. But the one thing now, and it's like at the time, I think it was a bit like, oh, eye rolling at this kind of behavior. But now I think Jamie Foxx come off better in the way kind of things are now. I think like a crew member was shot.
Mm.
So then he basically refused wherever they were, whatever kind of location where he was like, I'm not shooting outside the States for the rest of this film. So he flew home, was basically, we're not going anywhere else. Like, and at the and Michael Mann had to rewrite the film. Apparently there was a totally different ending. Mm. And what you have there is, at the time was like this kind of cool, artist who's kind of making his art, whatever cost, and this kind of like soft diva actor. Whereas now I think the narrative would be, if that happened, Fox would be presented as in the right and Michael Mann would be this like toxic kind of, putting people in danger for the,
for the sake of it. Well, he was bringing Colin Farrell on like these fake drug, but well, he was leading Colin Farrell to believe, I think, that they were like real, but they ended up being fake, these fake drug busts to like really immerse themselves in, which I mean, I suppose is kind of all well and good in one sense. I'm not sure I fully agree with that argument, but again, you're also going back to a man who, like, this is really the peak of his addiction. Like, he checks into rehab immediately after finishing this project. Like,
yeah, no, I'm sure if you were to pick the worst project to be on, if you were like addicted to cocaine and alcohol and whatever else, I'm sure like a Miami based drug dealer film directed and written by a madman is probably the high on the list of things you should probably not be doing.
Yeah, but probably not ideal. No. Not ideal.
So I'd say it was a lot of stress, and I don't think, it doesn't sound like Farrell is the most happiest opinion of the film. Like, I found a quote, but it was, in fairness, from a good few years ago, where it sounded like he wasn't too happy with the final result. But I think he's incredible in it. I do think that whatever magic himself and Mann were cooking up, he is the business in it. I think, like, Jamie Foxx is really good in it, but we were saying, like, he's not doing a whole lot in it, and he doesn't have a whole lot to work with. And that man, when that man is on, he's like one of the most charismatic people to ever be on film. And now in this, he's like very much like the sensible kind of worried guy who's like kind of checking in on his mate, whereas like Farrell is kind of the wild card. And I think Farrell is just a, like, you're like looking at a man, I don't know what age he was. Was he even 30?
Oh God, I don't know, 2006, and he's like 46, 44 now. Adam's Googling. I only vaguely know this because there was talk of him being banned potentially, which we'll talk about later on, because that brings us nicely back to the episode. But yeah, like, it's strange because, again, I don't know what this was like. So when this movie came out, I was 11, right? And didn't really have any, obviously didn't see it in cinema at the time, didn't really have any huge interest, but my limited understanding of the media and how Colin was being positioned at that time was like, this was going to be his comeback, because he was coming off the back of, he was coming out of the addiction, obviously. He was, and coming off the back of several severe flops, right? Kind of didn't really...
I'm just after checking. It was
2006,
right?
Yeah.
He was bang on 30.
Whoa.
A child, actually, when you think about it. A child. It kind of seemed like this was positioned anyway for to be his comeback, in inverted commas. And then this didn't fully stick the landing again, I don't think. But at the same time, he's not the worst thing about this movie. And I would say, again, he's probably one of the best things about it. And it was one of those things that me and Dave talked about again on the Colin Farrell episode. Even some of his worst movies, like, he brings a lot to them. I just think it's everything else. And I think it was maybe bad choices, you know. Obviously, he was struggling a lot at the time. It's hard to watch. And I remember when it didn't do that well, I'm doing inverted commas, because it did make money back. And like, it's had these retrospective reviews that are like, no, actually the movie's pretty good, whatever. It's hard to see. I just wish I could go back and be like, justice for Colin. Use my voice at that time. Like, because it's just, he's streets ahead of Fox in this, in my opinion.
I completely agree. I think you're looking at a man, Fox, you're looking at a guy who doesn't want to be there, thinks he's above it, and is probably checking his watch every time they got cut. This is going to be complete slander, but that's the impression from the stories you hear about it and just the way things are. Like, he's capable of being bad, but he's just there to kind of do his thing. Whereas Farrell is like, it's like, even if he's like, even like, he's just, there's a wildness to him in this film, and it's like, definitely not just the character or the writing. It's like, you just feel like he's a man on the edge, and that makes, it's a very bewitching kind of thing to be watching is in this kind of film, because it's not a traditional cop on the edge kind of thing. They're not doing the kind of tropey kind of side of it. It's more like they have someone who genuinely is on the edge, and they're putting them in all these high risk situations. And I think there's three kind of secret weapons, or there's three kind of MVPs of this. It's like Michael Mann, Farrell, and Gong Li, who plays Isabella, who's like his love interest. And I think their stuff is the stuff where, like, I could watch that like every year, once a year, I'd watch that film just for that stuff. Like, it's like this kind of, you're kind of like, he just makes, he's this way where it's like, he can make himself look in love with anyone, genuinely in love with anyone. And she looks like, Gong Li is a very seasoned actress. She's 11 years older than Farrell. She's in the business a lot longer than him. But you're like watching, you're like, she genuinely seems like she adores this man. It's like insane chemistry. And I think that's the kind of the heart of the film for me, and the kind of the soul of the film. And I think it's why, one of the reasons, that and the style of it are the reasons why it's been reclaimed in recent years, or in like very recent years, is because it's like, if it was just an exercise in style and like kind of the music and, you know, the suits and all that, I think it wouldn't have the kind of the coming back around kind of reputation it has. But like, the two of them are amazing together. It's like, I couldn't kind of believe rewatching it, like how invested I was in it. Because when I watched it in college, I think you would have been invested in it as well, but there was all this other stuff going on, and it's kind of a dense film the first time you watch it. You're trying to kind of keep up, and you're going into it with this kind of, oh, this isn't going to be that good. This is going to be a bit of a flawed thing. This didn't, you know. But then when you're going back to it with the kind of perspective of like years and years and years, and you're not too caught up in like, there's no hype around it really. You kind of can see the kind of its attributes for what they are. And I think that's the main one for me now, is the two of them. Like going to Cuba for mojitos. Going dancing.
Shagging in cars.
Like that bit. And again, it's like stuff where you're like, stuff where it's all told through glances. Like the stuff in the, where they have that kind of time in Cuba, and then they're meeting again and they get into the car and she puts up the thing and they're not even saying it. And it just, it's amazing direction and it's amazing performances where all you do is like put a camera on these two very amazing, and they can just sell the connection and sell the anticipation of it. You're not doing a lot. You're not doing a lot of like kind of technical wizardry or like kind of, you know, you're not working hard to make it sell that these two people are, could destroy everything by hooking up. It's like they just do that with glances, with like little touch, and with like just very kind of simple filmmaking techniques.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Talk to me about Michael Mann. What else has he worked on? Who is he for anyone who doesn't know?
Is he from Chicago? He's been around since the 70s. He is a writer, director, and producer. He's behind the original Miami Vice. He's behind the film, the most famous film of his is Heat. He's also done like the Muhammad Ali biopic with Will Smith and Last of the Mohicans, the Daniel Day-Lewis film. Like he's done loads of big kind of, in the 90s was kind of his like absolute like peak, but he's been around for ages and done amazing stuff. Collateral with Tom Cruise and Jamie Foxx, like an absolute baller film. Basically, he's done a few different genres, but his main genre is like crime. And he's a stickler for like that kind of realism. So it's like he will like drill his actors and like put them through the paces, and he'll research, and he'll use real kind of former criminals and former cops. Some of whom have gone on to like amazing acting careers, like Dennis Farina. So like he's a stickler for realism, but he's not like a documentary kind of filmmaker. He's like quite big and operatic, and he loves like sweeping love stories, and he loves like horrible villains and kind of tortured anti-heroes. He loves all that good stuff of drama, but he's like also brings this kind of layer of realism to it, which is so kind of, it's just so hard to get right and so hard to stick to your guns and pull off, but he does it so well. Like, I was kind of watching Miami Vice the other day, and there's bits in it like the opening nightclub scene and the Cuba stuff, and I was like, is this the best film I've ever seen? You're just watching it and it's not. But I feel the same way when I'm watching like Heat or Thief with James Caan, his like first film, or like Collateral, one of those, like his crime movies. When you watch it, like there's points where you're like, am I watching this? Why would I watch anything else other than this? It's like, it's just like, it's next, and it's become, he's a bit of like, you know, there's these guys who are in like it's like Martin Scorsese, Quentin Tarantino. It's like they're in these, like they're like the red flag filmmaker kind of things. We're like, real groundbreaking, you like them. But then you watch like, again, you're watching like, again, I'm watching Miami Vice, one of his like lesser films by anyone's standard, and you're like, this is some of the best shit I've ever seen. He's a tough guy. He's a hard kind of, probably not fun to work for, but he makes very, very amazing kind of films that are all about kind of very similar themes and kind of similar worlds.
I still haven't seen Heat. I need to see Heat.
I think you'd love Heat because Heat is like, because I'm watching Miami Vice. I think people were annoyed with Miami Vice when it came out because it's not, you're like, the guy who made Heat is like making this like cop, another cop epic, but he's doing it kind of weird and kind of jaggedy and like, not like it's not, whereas Heat is like kind of, it's like you perfect the genre and then all you can do from then on is like dissect the genre and kind of disassemble it, take it apart, put it back together in weird ways. But Heat is like, it's incredible. Like it, the hype is real with Heat. It's like just the most amazing cop versus criminal film ever made.
You mentioned a quote that Colin Farrell had about the movie, and I think this is the one you mean, and it is a few years old, but he seems to agree with us in terms of what we think went wrong with it. He said, "I didn't like it so much. I thought it was style over substance, and I accept a good bit of the responsibility." That bit kind of makes me sad. It was never going to be Lethal Weapon, but I think we missed an opportunity to have a friendship that also had some elements of fun.
Yeah, I think it's, I that's exactly the quote. It's, what I think was missing from it was, if there was like, it was like an even keel almost between Farrell, Gong Li and Fox. So where you would have Sonny Crockett in the middle of these two, and it's almost like kind of a love triangle without it actually, you know, a bit of a put or something there. And it just didn't have that. He just had such little impact on the main story. Fox did that outside of just like killing the bad guy at the end, or, you know, a spoiler alert, but, you know, it's like
if you're this far in and you haven't watched, what are you doing here, to be honest?
Exactly. But another thing, and this is I think I was watching it last night and I feel like it's almost like he went so out of his way to not, Michael Mann, to not, for it not to be the TV show, like the movie version of the TV show, or which it could have been, like, you know, it could have been like any number of those kind of films. He went so out of his way to make it this different, weird, jaggedy thing that I think, but then he didn't. Then with the cop stuff, I feel like the final shootout, the bad guys all die and none of the team dies, which is like kind of par for the course for a TV show. But for a film that otherwise is going out of its way to be this very strange, dark, real, like
different thing.
Yeah, it's like again, Trudy, kind of the Jamie Foxx character's girlfriend, played by Naomi Harris. Like, there's this whole tense subplot where she's kidnapped and they rescue her. It's this amazing set piece. They rescue her.
Yeah, I will say that is very good. And that is genuinely a very tense feeling.
And when they're leaving the kind of the place where she was being held, the bad guy's watching this on, like, you know, closed circuit TV or whatever, and he activates a bomb. And it's so shocking. My jaw was like, oh, I completely forgot it happened. But she doesn't die, and obviously there's all things like, oh, why does the woman have to die in these films to make things? But I feel like it almost felt in those moments like it was the TV show. You know, at the end, she's hooked up with all the machines at the end, then she's going to be okay, or the implication is she's going to be okay. You don't, I suppose, find out.
Comes out of the coma, yeah.
Yeah, it's that kind of stuff where you're like, odd that he kind of stuck with that kind of feeling of the TV show, yet everything else kind of went out of his way to make it feel like this, like, new kind of piece. Because it's as well the digital, what did you think of the digital, the quality of the digital? Because some of it is very noticeable. It's almost like it's some of the stuff when they're driving at night, it's like a handy cam most of the time. Like, it's very, very, like, it's like at the time, I think, jarring. Like when I saw Collateral in the cinema, and I remember seeing Public Enemies, his other film, a few years later, and I loved it. I remember, especially Public Enemies, but at the time, like, people hated it. And Miami Vice, they hated the look of it because it's got this whole other, like, aesthetic that no one was used to.
I kind of liked it because of that. I would say I would like to see it on a big screen. I think there's obviously such a difference between watching it on, like, a laptop or a TV at home than actually seeing it in cinema. But I kind of thought that was the point. Like,
yeah,
that was the point. But I can totally understand the reaction at the time to being like, what the fuck is this? Like, what am I watching?
Because you're showing them a whole new way of doing it. And it's like, no, just show us the thing that we like. As, you know, which is like even more so than any storytelling stuff or anything like that. It's like when it's actually like your way of experiencing, taking it in visually, it's a very kind of jarring thing.
You are here because we are talking about Colin and the Oscars
yes.
that are happening imminently. Yes. He is up for the Banshees of Inisherin.
Yes.
And I've talked about this with many people over the last few weeks, what we think of his chances. The SAGs have obviously happened since. He didn't win there.
Yes.
He didn't win at the BAFTAs. So far, the only award he's picked up over the award season is the Golden Globe.
Yes.
How do we rate his chances for the Oscars?
I will say this as someone who hasn't seen all the films. But I
thought you were going to say that you hadn't seen Banshees of Inisherin.
No,
I was going to be like,
Banshees of Inisherin.
Cut this.
I think that just purely going off my viewing of things online or whatever, I feel like there's such goodwill towards him. I wouldn't be surprised. And it's not a comeback, but it's almost like he's had two careers. He's had the career that led up to Miami Vice. Then which was like Hollywood movie star, Colin Farrell, he's the next big movie star. And then there's the career that kind of started within Bruges, maybe, the second phase of his career, where it's like Colin Farrell, indie kind of darling, who like has enough credibility and cachet to get these kind of small movies made. But he's also got this movie star kind of charisma thing still going on. But so then it's like he's kind of ramped. It's almost like he's ramped back up from In Bruges to this, and it's almost like this kind of great kind of coming home from. So I think for both the quality of his performance and for that reason, I think he's in for a mighty shout. Now, I am not good at this stuff. I'm not like good at, but that's my gut feeling. Would be if I was going to throw a few bob down, I would throw it on him.
I'd love him to get it.
Me too.
Really would.
Me too.
What do you think about the other lads' chances? Brendan Gleeson kind of hasn't gotten a look in. As much as he's getting nominations, there's no conversation around him. So we'll leave him out of it. Let's just assume he doesn't win. No offense, Brendan.
Is he up for
sorry.
Supporting?
I'd
give it to Barry Keoghan from that film.
Adam's going to check. Barry is definitely up. And I think
he's incredible.
He is.
In that
he's
film.
Really good in that film. He is up with a better shout, I think. And I would love to see Kerry kind of sneak in, but I don't know if she will.
No.
I think the female categories are like as competitive, if not more, than the male categories.
Big time. It's amazing she's even nominated, because it's like she's like been around for ages, but it's not like she's like a name per se the way the others are. So, and even in the other female supporting.
Brendan Gleeson is for best supporting.
Yes, I thought
I'd give
that.
It to Keoghan over him.
I think he would, if anyone's going to get it, it's going to be
Barry.
Barry, I think. Mm. Over Brendan, but I don't know.
Will any of them?
Yeah, it's a thing, which is, I don't know. We'll see. We have all our fingers and toes and everything. And
I think Farrell will win it. I have it in me. I feel it in my waters. He's going to win it.
Because I just think it's been a weird award season, because you have like, there seemed to be that early rush with the Golden Globes with them, and you have, the story has always been kind of positive around him. But then I don't know if you know this, like him and Brendan, I think Brendan got it, but Colin definitely did. Got COVID again, was fucked with COVID. So I don't think he's been out as much actively like campaigning. So I think he might not be in the forefront of people's minds.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you also have like, Austin picked up. So Austin got the Golden Globe in the drama category for the men, for the leading actors. And then obviously you have Lisa Marie Presley dies. That's why voting happens.
Yeah.
So to be cynical, I think that is going to play a part in that. But you mentioned this off mic. There is a conversation around Austin Butler being like, why will you not stop doing the accent, you fucking weirdo?
Which isn't a game, but isn't like the, by any means set in stone. Like, and he's incredible. And it's like, you should just be voting on the film. Well, a little bit for the career. It's nice to kind of like, to kind of, you know, give people their due. But I think Butler is like next level good in it. But it's like, you know, he's a young fella. He'd be around forever. I'm not like, as much as I loved the Elvis thing, it's great crack and he's amazing. I'm not like, my heart isn't set on him. Like, as, well, of course it's not, because it's like, you know, come on, Monday, you're just number nine. You know, like, fucking, I haven't seen After Sun, but I hope Mescal beats.
Have you not seen After Sun?
No, I want to, but it's obviously, it's one of the ones, like, I want to see it in the cinema, but I'm obviously, you're letting yourself in for emotional
turmoil. Yeah, I've talked to a few people this week that think he could sneak it, because they obviously have a better understanding of how the votes work, that it's like maybe like a trickle down thing of that he might sneak it in that way. But as much as I do think he deserves it, there's a part of me that thinks, and again, I get the argument that it's like we should be arguing about the film that we're seeing and it shouldn't be a career overview thing, but I can't help but do it, especially after doing this podcast on Colin Farrell, yeah. that I'm just like, if anyone deserves it, it's him. And I know there's an argument for Brendan Fraser as well. I haven't seen The Whale. I don't know if I will. And like, I want Brendan Fraser to have the world. I'm not sure if I want it with this film. And I'll say that even without seeing it. Like, I have no qualms about doing that. I feel icky even... But whatever, no, I don't know. Exactly. And then poor Bill Nighy is never going to look in, like, which you'd forget he's dominated.
No,
like.
I didn't. Like, God, apparently the film is amazing, but like, yeah, it's kind of like, I'm sure he's got that British upper lip thing of like, it's not my time.
Yeah.
But like, obviously, it's not like Bill Nighy's getting nominated every year. He's very much a character actor over the others. Like, so I'm sure he's like, fuck, this was my. But, I mean, in that instance, maybe I want. Maybe the English do it. No, no. But it's going to be interesting. Like, it's an insane Irish turnout. Like, it's insane. It's like, and it bodes well for just the perception of us and the work kind of coming down the pike, and you would hope. But I think, yeah, Farrell to win it. That's my heart says it. But then it's like the Academy and someone's literally playing Elvis Presley. Like, it's gonna be fucking Austin Butler. It's like I like the roundup of people who have won for playing famous singers specifically is like, there's a lot of them. It's like just a thing that people like to see in the Academy and vote for.
We'll see. As Flap Culture's official Bond correspondent, I did also want to ask you about.
You mean correspondent?
Adam, you're fired. stealing the good jokes. You are official.
This can be a regular. The correspondent. Now over to our correspondent.
No, I am going to call you back whenever the new Bond is announced. Yes. But there are rumbles, rumours. Rumblings, I don't know, about Colin Farrell's odds of playing Bond. They have been slashed. Now, I don't know if this is just like, you know, nice goodwill and like he's in the press and yada, yada, yada. But how likely do you think it is? Would you like to see him as Bond?
I wouldn't. No, it's kind of like, as much as I love Bond, I don't want to see interesting kind of actors who I like play that part.
It's you like, just want big, gorgeous dummies.
I want that, but also you just want someone who's like, who has no baggage themselves, so you kind of, they're like a blank slate. So it's like, they are James Bond, which doesn't bode well for our future career prospects, but that's not my problem. Whereas like, if it's like when people are saying Tom Hardy's in the running and you're like, in theory, I would love to see Tom Hardy play Bond, but I'm also like, I'd much rather see Tom Hardy play three different gangsters every year and do weird mumbly things with his voice. Like, that's what he's putting this earth to do. Like, he's not putting this earth to play Bond. The way like Connery was, or even like Craig was. So, I don't know. I wouldn't like to see Farrell as Bond. No,
I don't think he'd want to do it.
I don't think so either.
I think he very now money talks and all that, but I just think he's moved past that phase in his career. I think, to be honest, I think if he'd been asked around the time of the flops and all the cop movies, I think there would have been a better chance.
Oh,
also,
yeah.
There's the thing, like Barbara Broccoli has come out and said, or one of them has come out and said that the Bond is going to be in their 30s, because I think, or mid to late 30s, because I think there was talk of Tom Holland at one point, and then they had to come out and be like, no, he's literally a child. We're not a hope. Like, it's whatever.
Even if he's 40, I hope they never cast him. Just a little, just like, you need someone with blood in their veins, you know? Tom Holland is, you know, you can't, he wouldn't get up and... I just can't see him now.
He wouldn't get up and ride a woman, is that what you're trying to infer?
No. He just doesn't have like... It's like, he's like a nice, sweet guy. Bond should push you down the stairs like and shoot you in the kneecaps.
True.
You know? But no, Farrell, no. I want Farrell to kind of... If movies start coming back like... I've been watching a lot of like 90s kind of thrillers, like Tony Scott movies and stuff like that, like lately. And I'm like, if movies like that came back, I'd love to see Farrell playing like a lawyer or something. Stuff in movies like kind of like an alcoholic lawyer come back for one case, or like a private eye or something. Stuff like that. Movies like that. That's where I want Farrell to live. Like, kind of cool leading man parts in, like, you know, grown-up dramas.
Mm.
Michael Clayton. Stick Colin Farrell in a Michael Clayton type of film where he's, like, shady, but also you want him to kind of win out at the end. And it's, like, a good, well-written, kind of exciting film, but it's also not, like, a Marvel film or one of them yokes.
Yeah, no Marvels. I don't think he'll do a Marvel either, though, to be honest.
I hope to God he won't. He probably would, like...
Actually, maybe for his kids, because I know he's talked about that a little bit, but...
If Jake Gyllenhaal would do one, then Farrell would do one, I'd say.
But I also kind of feel like the Marvel thing is kind of going out of...
I do too, yeah.
...style now, and the way the movies themselves... Like, this phase is not phasing in the way that I think Marvel wants it to. Like, even that Ant-Man, people hate that Ant-Man. Yeah.
It's like how did the, it can't last forever. It's simply like that kind of thing. It just can't last forever. It's like in Hollywood in the 60s made all those big musicals like Dr. Dolittle and like, cause you know, My Fair Lady was good business, you know, all those kind of films. And then eventually they were making these things. It's like, who wants these? Like it was grand. Like the novelty factor, these aren't kind of novelty movies. It's like, it's not like, well, everything's kind of a novelty, but it's like, superhero movies, it's like there's a novelty factor to going to see these movies. And then if that's all they are, you just feel like, he's like, wow, I can't see another one of these yokes. What are you on about? So like, it was never going to last forever. I think, I'd be interested, because there's no actually, but what it's done now, it's made that there's no actual stars anymore.
Mm.
There's no movie stars. There's like actors who can command big paychecks because they're associated with one role. Like, but there's no like kind of people you're like, I need to see the new XYZ. Well, there is the odd couple, but like.
But it's kind of evened the playing field in like, a bad way, bad nearly. Way, yeah. Like you can't distinguish who's actually good and who's just been in a lot of stuff that's exactly. made a lot of money.
Who would you now be like, I want to see go to the cinema because this person is in it?
This is kind of a cop out, but like Colin, I would. Paul, I would. Paul Mescal. I don't know why I'm saying them by first name. I'm trying to think of women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
I still need to see Tara.
I feel like Margot Robbie is like somehow swinging it because she's not been in like films that, the last while anyway, that have done gangbusters.
No, I'm kind of, and I mean this in the least disrespectful way possible, but I'm kind of over it. Like the last two things she's been in, as you said, have not been that good.
Well, I don't know. I can't speak for like Babylon because I haven't seen it, but like they definitely haven't been successful, but she's still... She's somehow kind of in that world where she will like, there's still a little bit of like eventness to her being in it. Because I think she came out of the gate so strong with like Wolf of Wall Street. I remember seeing her in that and you're just like, holy shit, this is like a movie star.
Mm. I'll go see Barbie. Sorry, Barbie. I'll go see Barbie. I'm having a Pedro Pascal fixation, so if he's in something, I'll probably go to that.
He's TV. He's not a movie star.
But that's what I'm thinking of people. Yeah. They're all TV people.
I know. It's like I'm watching, like you watch some guys and you're like, these are, it's like John Hamm, it's like Bryan Cranston, amazing actors, but like they're TV actors. John Hamm is not a movie actor. Mm. John Hamm's not someone you want to see on the big screen unless, you know, not that you don't want to see him up there, but it's like, they work best in their like in TV in like kind of in these amazing roles, but like TV nonetheless. But it's like whereas like even if they're not as good actors as them, there's other people that you just want to be seeing. Like, yeah, Mescal definitely is like a proper. He's got that star kind of quality to him now. It's the Irish, you know.
Yeah,
sausage ball.
We just got it. We just got it. What can I say? Peter, it's been a pleasure. Where can people come and see you tell jokes?
They can come and see me tell jokes. I'm doing a tour called Great Lad.
Which you are.
Which I am doing. I'm doing it March the 24th in Liberty Hall, which is sold out. But who knows? You can keep an eye on and see. And then the rest of the time, the Great Lad is performed in September. Coughlin's Cork. September the 14th.
I say Collins. Collins. I think,
that's it. It's Collins.
Yeah,
that is right.
People say, and when they say Nicola Coughlin, I'm like, that's not her name. But then she calls herself Coughlin.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's
Collins. I much prefer Collins. So Collins in Cork, and the September the 14th in Vicar Street, September the 15th. Dolan's in Limerick, September 16th. The Town Hall Studio in Galway is in the September Town Hall Studio. Town Hall Theatre in Galway is September 21st. Portlaoise, I'm doing Kavanagh's on the 22nd and in Dundalk in the Spirit Store on September the 23rd. So that's 2 weeks, very intense shows with my show, Great Lad. It's a very stupid, hopefully very funny show.
You're going national.
I'm going national, baby.
Is our friend Mr. Nugent going to be there?
Friend, yes, he is, because unfortunately I am, you know, as an internet content creator, I have no business in live performing. So Liam is going to step in for some of the show and do some jokes and do some kind of topical humour.
Love it. If you don't know who Liam Nugent is, you need to buy tickets to the show and you will find out and you will have such a great time. And I'll be at the Vicar Street one, so
come over
and we can clap and shout for Peter. That'll be nice. Such a pleasure. You are always welcome back.
I will always come back.
I will draft you in for a bonus episode whenever our bond is announced. Maybe even after the first bond comes out, we can talk about it. Movie club.
Yes, yes. Correspondent.
Yes. Peter McGann, thank you so much for joining me once again on Flop Culture.
Thank you.
Big thank you to Peter for joining us in Flop Culture Towers once again. I will leave all of the dates he mentioned below in the show notes. I'm really looking forward to the show. It's going to be so good. Before I let you go for another week, let's talk Top of the Flops.
You're a flop.
Top of the Flops. I was spoiled for choice this week. I mean, who do we pick? Nick Cannon and his fake baby show. Yes, that's not real. There was a trailer, kind of a clip put out this week in which Kevin Hart is hosting the show where women compete to bear Nick Cannon's next child. Love Dystopia. Big fan of that. It's part of a show that Kevin Hart's doing. It's not real. So the aliens don't need to come and get us just yet. But flop behaviour anyway, to be honest, for engaging with that. So honorary flop to him. Tom Sandoval, flop behaviour cheating on your missus. That's all I'll say there. Vanderpump Rules fans, I stand with you. I won't pretend like I know what you're going through, but I stand with you there. But there could really only be one. Well, technically it's a collective top of the flops this week. The Burke family. Teacher Enoch Burke, he's been in the news for a long, long time, longer than anyone would care to admit or want, to be completely honest. Himself, five members of his family were forcibly removed from the Court of Appeal this week by Gardaí. One person was arrested during the incident and has been charged with threatening and abusive behaviour at Dublin District Court. Love to see that. So Enoch was in court. He had an appeal in against injunctions granted by the High Court last year directing him not to trespass at Wilson's Hospital School in Multifarnham, County Westmeath, where he previously taught. He kept turning up. We've all seen the memes of him at the gate, just standing there, just refusing to leave. Never met a man more committed to work, like, loves capitalism. Enoch Burke loves capitalism. But he was in court this week with his parents, Sean and Martina, and his siblings, sister Amy, and his brothers Isaac and Simeon. And as it became clear that the court was ruling against him, his sister Amy started interrupting the appeal court president, Mr. Justice George Birmingham, began shouting about her brother's constitutional rights, which is interesting when you consider the fact that Enoch didn't really care about anyone's rights in the school. But anyway, that's another story for another day. So the judge told her to sit down, asked Gardaí to remove her from the courtroom. But she continued to shout at the three judges and was joined by other family members in what became... what's the singing equivalent of a flash mob or like a shouting equivalent? They just all started shouting at the judges. Martina Burke, Enoch's mam, told the judges they were bowing before the altar of transgenderism. I love that Fall Out Boy song personally. After the judges had left the bench for a second time, Amy was dragged from the courtroom by Gardaí. There were scuffles, struggles, chaotic scenes. Other members of the Burke family were resisting attempts by Gardaí to remove them. Enoch Burke at one point shouting, "Leave my father alone," called Gardaí thugs. Enoch and his brother Isaac were restrained by two other Gardaí, and then one of them was fully all fours, like a human stretchered out of the court. And I mean, yeah, sitting on the floor, this is Isaac, sitting on the floor, dragged out himself, accused the Gardaí of dragging two elderly people out of court. And the funny thing about it is, so there's obviously loads of journalists there covering this. There's also a lot of transition year students, obviously there for whatever you do in transition year, just having a great day off, witnessing history in the making, and like probably one of the most entertaining scenes they've seen in a long time. And as much as it is funny, right, and I saw some very good clips, Victoria's Secret has up on her stories the clip of Isaac being dragged out, and it's the old Keeping Up with the Kardashians theme over it. Very good. Also saw a clip where someone put Nicki Minaj's Roman Holiday over it. Comedy. Comedy at its finest. I just would love to have the lack of self-awareness that they do, that there's not even like an iota of shame that this happened, because I feel, in my opinion, I would get loads done. Clearly none of these people are, but do you know what I mean? If I did this, I would not want to leave my house for many, many days, many, many weeks, many, many months. The shame. But they're going to be out banging some kind of drum tomorrow, talking about rights, talking about how, you know, transgender people are everywhere and they're ruining everything when they just want to be called by their names, by the names that they want to be called, and they just want to hang around and they just want to live life, and that infuriates them. So I just, very frustrating, extreme flop behavior. I mean, just, yeah, no need. Thank you so much for listening, as always. And if you're new here, you're very welcome. We are flopculture_pod on Instagram and TikTok. You can get in touch, as always, at helloflopculture@gmail.com. If you have a suggestion for an episode, let me know. Always open to them. Please rate the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts if you want a personalized bop or flop recommendation. And you can also leave a 5-star review on Spotify. It helps people find the show, and it's hugely appreciated by me. We are creeping closer to the 200 reviews on Spotify, so I would very much appreciate if you would consider giving us your 5 stars. Would be hugely, hugely appreciated. Next week's episode, you're going to want to listen if you're a Succession fan. That's all I'll say on that. This podcast has been edited by Adam Shanahan and artwork, as always, by Brian Lambert. I will see you all next week. Mind yourselves. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.